So, Kevin, huge thank you for coming back.
It's always good to be here, Sean. Thank you. Let's start with what we've learned over the last while. As people remember, there's been a court case, the International Common Law Court, that convicted Ratzinger and tossed him out of office in 2013, has reconvened because of all this new evidence coming out about Robert Prevost, Pope Leo. And let me just summarize that. We know that he was present at various Ninth Circle cult ritual ceremonies. We know that from an eyewitness. We actually now have three eyewitnesses. Let me start with the first one. She's a Polish woman, old. She, at a young age, was inducted into the cult. Now, I did a video conference with her this last week, and one of the first things we did was showed her a picture. I don't know if you have that one of Robert Prevost as a newly ordained priest, meeting John Paul II, Karol Wojtyła from Poland. And they're both co-conspirators and also co-participants in these Ninth Circle rituals. Well, I showed the picture to this woman, and she had an abreaction, which is, no, those are the Mormons. Wrong picture. This woman I spoke to, when I showed her the picture of the young Pope Leo, she began to have an abreaction. I hadn't told her anything about who it was. I just showed her the image. Abreaction is when you relive the physical trauma in some way. She began to gag, cough. She couldn't breathe. And she said, "That's him. That's him." And she took some time and then came back to me and said she was there. She saw him at two ceremonies. First, when he was newly ordained in September 1978, the month they killed Pope John Paul I and John Paul II came in. And she saw him there at that ceremony. And also in 1983, when that girl who was kidnapped, Emanuela Orlandi, was brought in, she saw him on both occasions. She said that Robert Prevost raped her. He was a new participant in this. And at that same ceremony, she was handed a knife, a pregnant girl about her age. She was 14 at the time. A young pregnant girl was brought in, and she was told she had to take the knife and kill the baby and rip out the fetus. That was part of the Ninth Circle ceremony. They then eat the fetus. It's part of the induction rituals. Now, I mentioned before that anyone who is to be the Pope goes on a list. If you participate in these rituals, you're approved for being a future Pope. If not, you go on a blacklist and you'll never be elected. Kind of like how governments run. This fellow was, according to her, she said he raped me. He was at the ceremony. He took part in eating the remains. And that's the first eyewitness. The second eyewitness I spoke to on a video conference call was actually a government source. He's a member of the Italian government. And surreptitiously, for a number of years, he and some associates have been documenting the Ninth Circle. And they have concrete evidence, including that reference to a log being kept in the Vatican Library about these rituals with the names of everybody on them. And this guy's name is on it, along with other people. They've kept this log since 1870. And the third eyewitness is an actual member of the Ninth Circle cult. And I haven't spoken to the prosecutor yet. He's spoken to the court prosecutor. In that next, this coming Monday, like in a day, day after tomorrow, the court is formally convening with the prosecutor to look at all the evidence. The court trial will begin September 1st. That's when the subpoenas will go out to so-called Pope Leo and others, because under international law, they can be summoned as individuals, regardless of their office and the protection they have from that. So that's kind of the latest. But I'm telling you, when I was looking at this woman's reaction, I've worked with a lot of survivors of these tortures. It was extremely legitimate. She told me many other things, which maybe we don't have time right now to go into, but linking other people, definitely linking him to John Paul II, who was a high member of the Ninth Circle cult.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin, we've got plenty of time if you want to expand on what she told you.
Well, she was describing the history of her family, how her parents were Nazi collaborators in Poland during the war, working with the Catholic Church at that time. You see, Ratzinger and John Paul II, Karol Wojtyła, were both members of what's called the Knights of Darkness. It was an SS cult that used people in concentration camps for their satanic rituals, along the same lines of what we've talked about. you know, ritually torturing and killing people, and then eating them, you know, as part of a kind of a similar to the Catholic Mass, where it's believed that the blood and body of the innocent gives you eternal life. As part of those ceremonies, she said people have to take a vow. And that's significant because, remember, the present pope was taking part in this the same month that he took his first vows as a Catholic priest. So he takes a vow to be a priest, to be loyal to the church, and then a dual vow, a mirror image vow to the Ninth Circle. And that's when they know the heaven. That's when they know he can be approved as a future pope. Now, he's got a whole history with Bergoglio, his predecessor, down in South America as well, which I think we touched on last time. But as part of that, she said that her parents inducted her into the cult. They killed her oldest sister, which is the usual ritual. You have to sacrifice your eldest and then use the other children in her family, you know, as participants. Like I say, she said she had to kill. She's been involved in killing herself. This is why often witnesses don't come forward, because they know they're guilty too. And she said it's a network that is unbelievably wide. It spans the world. It involves, which we'll talk about when we get to the Mormons, involves a lot of money and experimentation. These Ninth Circle rituals aren't just sadistic for those purposes. They're experimental as well. They have a lot of military backing. And I remember Toos Nieuwenhuis, the Dutch survivor of the Ninth Circle, said she was flown to Melbourne, Australia, and held on a military base. And military doctors worked on her. So a lot of these techniques of mind control, energetic captivation, and all that, it's been a military project for the long time. And the Mormons have been at the front. I learned that the Mormons, in fact, helped pioneer the MKUltra mind control experiments in the 1950s. And so they've had a lot of military and government protection since then. And so, you know, when she began to describe how she killed this other girl and ripped out the fetus, she had all the symptoms of people who have described the same things to me in the Indian residential schools, in the Indian hospitals in Canada. It's like mirror image, like listening to people, Native people in Canada talk. So you could just feel in your gut, and I know from experience that this is legitimate.
Is it when there's war and the aftermath and life is cheap? Is that when these things become more prevalent? You know, look at the Nazi experiments. And, you know, is that when these organizations go to these countries and perform these rituals because they can get away with it more easily if a country's war-torn?
That helps. But don't forget, the Catholic Church can go wherever it wants. It's a law unto itself. Governments let them do whatever they want. Hide child rape and murder under their own rules, and law can't touch them. You know, they're within every country, they're a power or a nation unto themselves. And usually in the international law, when you create a separate sovereignty within another country, that's an act of war. You're challenging the laws and the sovereignty. And yet, you know, these agencies are totally at war with children and human liberties and everything, and they're allowed to get away with it. So they're a monopolistic power to start off with. But you're right. Wars are the perfect medium for this. It was the medium for the slaughter of so many people during the Nazi genocide. But, you know, it's interesting when you look at in the takeover, when the Vatican and the British Crown moved around the world and were taking over countries like in Canada, they framed the conquest of indigenous people as a war. They said these people are heathens and they have to be subjugated just like in a war, and you treat them like prisoners of war. And so, yeah, that whole mentality and practice of war is definitely the fog behind which a lot of this can happen.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And people, you know, all you got to do is look at the experiments of Goebbels and stuff like that with the Nazis. And there's just no limits to the things these people will do.
And don't forget, like, public health crises are also the perfect fog for this, because that's traditionally been seen a war. Like the Nazis described their destruction of the Untermensch, the subhuman people like Jews and Slavs, as a public health measure. They said these people are a pestilence. They're threatening the health of the body politic, and we have to eliminate them. It's exactly the language of missionaries in Canada and in America and around the world when they're describing the Aboriginal populations. They're dirty, you know, when in fact, in practice, they were a lot cleaner than the European settlers who showed up. But, you know, they framed it in that sense. It's a public health issue, just like COVID, right? Same mentality, same practice.
So the survivors of the Vatican then, the Vatican select these people and classify them as subhuman, and that eases their consciences so they can do anything they want to them. Well, do they just not have consciences in the first place?
Well, they don't. You know, they're functional psychopaths in reality. But don't forget, in Catholic doctrine, still to this day, it's believed that if you're not a baptized Catholic, you're not a human being. And you're not complete until you're a baptized Catholic. And as a non-human being, you can be enslaved, killed, you know. And Jorge Bergoglio, Pope Francis, the so-called liberal pope when he was in America, praised the Franciscan missionaries who just killed over 100,000 native people, applauding them for their zeal in eliminating non-Catholics. You know, I mean, it's there, but it's like the huge dragon sitting in the living room that people are just pretending isn't there, right?
Yeah. And the people that you've spoke to then that, you know, have witnessed and have got the bravery to speak about these things, could potentially one of those be interviewed? You know, we could disguise them or whatever.
We're planning on doing that. I won't say with who, but we're going to mask their voice and their, you know, like, you know, when you darken the face and alter the voice. But we plan to do that with their permission. We have investigators already with these people, working with them, getting them protection. As soon as we identify an eyewitness, we get protection around them. And so we've also had the help of, and there's another thing I wanted to report, there's people within Interpol who have the means to provide what are called international coroner's warrants. So these warrants, authorized by a coroner, gives you the right to go into any place, even if it's the Vatican secret chambers, access it to look for evidence of a crime scene. And these coroner warrants are extremely powerful. We use them in Canada. That's how we access that mass grave at the Church of England death camp in Brantford, Ontario, where we found the bones that proved to be children's. And so we're combining that. When the court case starts, it's very exciting because in early September, groups all over the world are going to be working with the court to enter into Catholic churches, seize documents. We have the right, don't forget, under, we have the right of entry into these churches. It was granted to us under international law as part of a court case. Any citizen also has the right of entry. It's called a necessity defense. If you know a child's being harmed, you have the right to go in anywhere, break a window, commit a felony to go in and save that child. It's called a necessity requirement under the law. And also the right of reparations. These churches killed generations of people, and the victims' families have the right to seize all those as lawful reparations. So the law is with us. You know, people just haven't exerted it because, A, they don't know about it, and, B, they're too afraid to take on the Catholic Church, right?
So, Kevin, what put the Mormon Church on your radar?
Well, they've been on there for a while. For one thing, it's kind of funny. My grandmother on my dad's side was a Mormon. She was a lapsed Mormon. But I began to hear this stuff as a child about all the weird beliefs and rituals and that. But Grandma told me something really interesting early on in that she said they've got a lot of government backing. That's why they do whatever they want. And that kind of always interested me. So as I learned about the Catholic Church, lo and behold, these eyewitnesses start coming to me. And I've interviewed about half a dozen of them. They're posted on my radio. I think I sent you some of the shows. Exclusive interviews with the survivors of ritual killings and torture in Salt Lake City at the Mormon temple. Reading those testimonies, it's like listening to Ninth Circle victims. And I figured out after a while that the Mormon Church is actually a dual church body to the Catholic Church. Take, for example, how much money they have. In 2024, if you can believe this, the Mormon Church had $269 billion. Now, that's at the same par as the Vatican Bank. That's probably possibly even more in terms of investment assets and that. And they say, you know, the official Wikipedia explanation that is, oh, well, any Mormon is required to give 10% of their tithe, you know, tithing 10% of their income. But they've only got 13 million members as opposed to 1.5 billion Catholics. So where does all the money come from? The same place in the Vatican Bank. They're tied into that international financial network where they launder money for the mob. They've got the access to the Vatican Bank money. And so they're invested all over the world. I can get into that. But the second part I want to say is that they also have a mirror operation when it comes to the Ninth Circle. And the proof of that is that picture you had up of the Mormons meeting with Jorge Bergoglio, Pope Francis. The Catholic Church describes the Mormons as a pagan cult, and yet there they are meeting in a special audience with Pope Francis. I believe this was 2022. Now, the guy shaking his hand or handing him something is Russell Nelson. He's now still alive. He's 101 years old. Does that look like a 98-year-old man sitting there? And those are his other flunkies. They were getting permission from Bergoglio to build a huge Mormon temple in the suburbs of Rome. Okay. And what I figured out, and along with other people, is that when the heat comes down about the Ninth Circle in the Catholic Church, the Ninth Circle just moves their operations into the Mormon temples. It's back and forth. We know that from a Mormon eyewitness named Asia Dutson. And I worked with her for a while. And Asia said that there's a tunnel linking the main Catholic cathedral in Salt Lake City, Utah, with the Mormon temple. She was taken down there as a child. Her father, Ray Barraclough, who was an elder in the Mormon church, took her down there. Again, ritual torture, but also medical experimentation going on. And so these guys, it's really like a dual operation, the Mormons and the Catholics. But they hide behind the rhetoric of you know, condemning each other as pagans to hide the fact that they're really the two biggest banks and real estate companies in the world when you look at their assets and the way they operate.
So you're getting asked to just give a basic definition of what a Mormon really is.
It's funny because half the Mormons who are interviewed don't believe they're Christians. You know, so it's sometimes it's portrayed as a Christian cult, other times as a, quote, pagan cult. It was started in the mid-1800s by a guy called Joseph Smith back in Ohio. And he said that he had a vision where this angel called Moroni showed up. Now, it's Moron with an I on the end, so I like to just call him the Moronic Angel. But anyway, the Moroni shows up and hands him golden tablets, which turned out to be the Book of Mormon. And a long, very arcane description of how God lives on another planet and sent Moroni to redeem a certain elect people. It's a typical kind of millenarian cult. But Joseph Smith is the only one who witnessed it. So we're all going on his word that he, you know, maybe he was on a drunk, maybe he had a hallucination, you know. But everyone believes in this encounter between Joe and and Moroni. And so on that basis, they start this movement. They do get attacked by their neighbors. And so they, under the pretext of being persecuted, they move west and they start a theocratic state in what's now Utah. Utah is basically run by the Mormons in every way, economically. And it's interesting because we learned recently that China has been funding a lot of money through Salt Lake City and are using the Mormon influence in U.S. government to kind of influence things in America. That's kind of a whole other thing, brings in the China factor. But anyway, they camp out around the time of the Civil War in Utah, what's now Utah. They set up this theocratic state run by a guy called the Prophet, who's like Russell Nelson, the child killer nowadays. And they start killing all the Gentiles. Anyone who isn't a Mormon is called a Gentile, and it's open season on other settlers moving through the area. There was a good movie made about that with John Boyd. I forget the name of it, but it's about the Mountain Meadows Massacre, where they brought in a couple of hundred settlers heading to the coast, threatened them that the Ute Indians were about to kill them all, disarmed them, then massacred all of them, and kept the children and raised them as Mormons. They even got in a conflict with the U.S. Army. There was a running battle between the U.S. cavalry and the Mormon state. Eventually, they worked out a deal where basically the Mormons get to run Utah as their own, you know, kind of private operation, just like the Catholics do, untouched by U.S. law. So again, another parallel there, right?
So when I was living in Arizona, which is not so far away from Utah, I remember there was programs on the TV and arrests whereby one of the methods of the Mormons was the interbreeding with the young women.
Yeah.
And they would run out the young men so that there was more of these young women available for the elders. And it just seemed like a pyramid scheme.
Well, it's a polygamous culture, so men are expected to take multiple wives. And, you know, my aunt Danielle on my mom's side was a Mormon, and it was horrible. She kept marrying these guys who would beat her up, go off to hookers during the week, and then they'd get up on Sunday in the Mormon church and confess, and everyone would be all happy that he confessed, and he'd go back to the hookers during the week, right? Kind of typical religious sanctification for whatever sin you want to do, right? But Danielle divorced her husband, Terry, for beating her so much. Danielle gets expelled from the Mormon church, not Terry, you know, because she dared to go against her husband. It's believed, the Mormons believe that women don't get into heaven unless their man brings them through, whether it's your father or your husband. So you've got to be completely compliant. For a long time, they didn't let in blacks because they believed the blacks were inferior. Like in the Bible, Noah's three children, Shem is dominant over Ham. This is how they justified apartheid too, you know, that one biblical quote that the white man is superior to the black. And they only recently set up a black Mormon church. It's still segregated, you know, officially. So, I mean, there's that long, you know, kind of mess that's associated with these people.
So how come occasionally there are arrests and exposés on the Mormons, the kind of stuff I saw? Was that just showcasing that they're cleaning house and really sacrificial lambs?
Yeah, it's like with the present Pope. There's a thing online saying when he was bishop in Peru, he discovered abuse going on in one of the Catholic sects and he uprooted it, right? No, I mean, when those things happen, it means he goes in to cover it up, and then they spin it to make it look like he's discovered a few child rapists. And it's always the bad apples theory. It's just bad priests who are doing this. But the point is, reminding people the Catholic policy, a century old, of crimen solicitanus, that says everyone must suppress the evidence of child rape and never tell the police, from Pope right down to the woman sitting in the pew by herself. They're all expected to protect child rapists, which is a criminal conspiracy under the law, but like Mormons, they get away with it, right?
So currently the way it's set up, doesn't the gene pool start to get a bit incestuous?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, you know, it's funny when you go and talk to Mormons, it's a lot of them are like blonde-haired, blue-eyed Aryans. It was an early experiment in genetic engineering, social engineering, and the fact that they were doing that was part of the MKUltra experiments. And that's why not only do they have so much money, but they have such a favored status with the U.S. government. We talked about how the CIA and the FBI recruit inordinately out of the Mormons. There are a lot of Mormon feds, right? And they were groomed that way. You know, I mean, a lot of them went through these experiments. And it's, you got to not only follow the money, but the political military power when it comes to these cults, because a member of a cult is pre-adapted to be controlled and to hand over a lot of their money and to be part of a tyranny, right? That's why they rely on cults like the Church of Rome or the Mormons, right?
Yeah, when I started out as a stockbroker, one of my competitors in the office was a Mormon, and most of his clients were Mormon. And it was like just this big money funnel that was just going through this network of Mormons.
Yeah, well, you know, some of their investments, last year, they're run by an investment firm called Ensign Peak. And their portfolio, investment portfolio last year alone was $56.8 billion. They're heavily invested in Google, Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, JP Morgan Chase, lots of stock, bond, real estate in a huge way, and Eli Lilly Pharmaceuticals. Now, Eli Lilly had a deal going back almost a century where they would fund theological colleges in return for getting children for their drug testing experiments. And so it's very significant. They're tied into Eli Lilly. There was probably Mormon involvement in those experiments for a long time, right?
So what range of crimes are you aware of in the Mormon Church?
Everything we've always talked about in relation to the Ninth Circle. Anything you can imagine, and even worse. Ritual torture, murder of children, you know, things that, you know, when you hear about, you just think they're out of some bad horror movie, but it's all the same stuff. It's the same practice going on. They would, one of the Polish women was, when I was talking to her, kind of off the record, because she's stuff she doesn't want to share yet. But she said she saw a whole basement area where children were in cages, and they were missing body parts, like missing eyes, nose, things. They were being worked on. They were being like vivisected, like experimental animals. I know that from Canada, confirmed at the what's called the Allen Memorial Institute in Montreal, which got lots of money from CIA for MKUltra experiments. Josef Mengele and all those Nazi doctors came and worked at the Allen Memorial in Montreal. And Anne Diamond, one of the eyewitnesses, said she saw this Nobel laureate, this Nobel-winning neuroscientist, Wilder Penfield. You can look him up. He's lauded all over the world. He was experimenting on Native children, you know, kind of had their head open. It was doing brain experimentation on them and removing parts. And she said she saw him strangle a Native girl to death on the table because she wasn't cooperating. She was fighting. So it's that kind of level of horror. And the best defense is nobody wants to believe that, you know, like the very people who have the best reputations are the one with the bloodiest hands in this stuff. So, you know, it's along that line. And fortunately, we're going to, in the fall, when the case begins, the prosecutor is going to be making public as many of these testimonies as possible that don't actually endanger the eyewitnesses or other people. But that'll all be coming out in the fall, hopefully.
So it seems that the Vatican is insulated legally because it's a law unto itself of its own intelligence agency, etc. With the Mormon Church, isn't it based in the United States of America? And doesn't it make more vulnerable to legal penetration?
No, because a practice for many centuries is that churches have their own jurisdiction. I had that, you know, when I was thrown out of the United Church for exposing this stuff, I appealed the kangaroo court that threw me out without any due process. I went to the Attorney General of British Columbia, and he wrote back a letter 5 months later saying the internal processes of a church are outside the jurisdiction of this ministry. In other words, outside the laws of Canada. This is the Attorney General, right? And he doesn't mind putting that around because he knows there'll be no consequence, because all governments of the world do this. They allow religions to be their own jurisdiction. And there's been a long history of that. I mean, you know, that's why there's been so much genocide in the world. Who led the genocide? You know, it was coming out of Rome, but it was missionaries first who would go into an area, spread the smallpox, you know, soften up the population, brainwash the minority. And, you know, it's the same old game all along, right?
Yeah. And, you know, we see the sacrifice of children. It's ritualistic. This kind of an energy extraction. Do you see parallels in the Mormon rituals with that?
Oh, yeah. Like Asia Dutson, who was one of the Mormon eyewitnesses, her name was Barraclough. Her dad, Ray Barraclough, was an elder when she was pre-verbal. It was as a young baby. He had her in a cage, and they would come and experiment on her. He locked her underground in a coffin. It's all designed to traumatize, create multiple personalities that can then be used as sleeper agents, sleeper assassins, all that usual stuff. But she said that early on of her conscious self, by the time she was about 5 or 6, they used to take her down to Mexico. They put her in a meat locker and transport her illegally across the Rio Grande into Mexico and to be used down there. And she said during one of those ceremonies, she would leave her body, because that's often a similar reaction when you kind of dissociate and you leave your body. And she was watching what was happening. And she said she saw what looked like Satan manifesting right in the middle of the ceremony. And, you know, and it was like a big void, kind of like what I felt I was standing outside when I was in St. Peter's Square doing that exorcism. It's like this nothingness. And she felt that she was, her soul was being like sucked right into this and feeding this thing. And she said she saw it feeding off many souls all over the world, not only in these ceremonies, but in, she saw it as an octopus with tentacles everywhere. Right. And that's kind of one of the stories she passed on about that. So this is, you know, very serious stuff, right?
Wasn't Ted Bundy drawn to the Mormon area? And was that some kind of camouflage he was trying to?
I'm not sure. That rings a bell, but I don't know enough about that. So.
All right, let's talk about the Mormon Church's ties to the U.S. government and China.
Well, I mentioned before, there was a news article last year, I think, in CNN that said that China had been using Mormon politicians. Like that fellow, I forget, he ran for the Republican nomination couple of times back, Mormon senator, using them as to influence DC about some of their trade policies and that. We talked a little bit already about the role, how important the Mormons have been in the post-war American government with the MKUltra. Okay, there he is. Russell Nelson, he's the guy. Let me just divert for a minute to talk about him. He personally raped and tortured Asia Dotson and many other children. She saw him kill children. He's a doctor, so she saw him doing experimental brain surgery on children to make them more compliant. He apparently also was responsible for the death of several top Mormon leaders. Let me just bring up this article. This is Asia Dotson speaking in an interview I did in 2019. Russell Nelson may be the prophet, but he's also known as the killer. I know someone who saw him continually rape children as young as 5. I know people who were tortured by him as children. When somebody's to be killed, Nelson's the one who schedules it, and sometimes he performs it since he's a doctor. He's performed rituals of aborting babies, killing the fetus, cutting it up and eating it, and drinking his blood, just like the Ninth Circle. I know he performed an abortion on his own niece. He's vile. He was the ringleader of the child trafficking ring in Bountiful, Utah that was busted up in the 1980s. Russell also organized and performed the murder of previous prophets so he could rise to power. I know that as a doctor, Russell organized the various stages of poisoning of the prophet Harold B. Lee in 1974, Spencer Kimball in 1985, and Howard Hunter in 1995. They were all killed in the church hospital in Salt Lake City. So that's an affidavit from Asia Dotson. That's going to be in the court docket. And it shows you, I mean, this is the guy they literally worship the way a Catholic does the Pope, right? And so anyway, with that kind of influence, to be able to get away with that, I know there was 60 Minutes was planning an investigative story into the Mormon Church in Utah. There was a woman, and I spoke to her, an investigative journalist called Linda Walker, and she was shut down quicker than you can imagine, because she began to uncover the fact that there had been strong ties with the presidential office going back to the 50s. Eisenhower's agricultural secretary was a Mormon. There have been Mormons in almost every cabinet. And so this is something we're not quite understanding yet, how deep the connection goes, but it's definitely tied into that cultic nature, same thing you find in the Catholic Church, right?
So what happens to whistleblowers in the Mormon Church?
Well, they usually, the same thing that happens in the Church of Rome, they vanish or they get silenced or scared off. Asia Dotson worked with me for 3 years, and then she broke it off. She went into hiding. She felt her children were being endangered, but she was a very brave woman. She came forward and named names, like the testimony you just heard, and gave me permission to use her testimony, because she knows that, you know, children are going to die if she doesn't go public with this. But she did the whole gamut of being taken down into the tunnels. She said that journalists have gone missing in Salt Lake City. Everything is so controlled in Utah. You can't write anything bad about the Mormon Church in any of the media there. So this is all done, you know, like the way we do it, kind of through our own media and off the radar, right?
So do they have their own intelligence apparatus, enforcers, Opus Dei?
They don't need it. The FBI works hand in glove with them all the time. You know, and that was, and I can't quite remember. Asia told me something about that. I'd have to look it up, but close connection. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. The FBI a few years ago worked with Department of Homeland Security to look for missing people in Utah. But the reason they did that is that there was a movement starting, like ours did many years ago in Canada, grassroots movement to investigate this for themselves. So DHS comes in and goes, we're going to investigate it, but Homeland Security has no mandate to investigate missing people. FBI does, but the FBI handed it over to the Department of Homeland Security. And they come up with a report after a year. No, we didn't find anything. Kind of like, you know, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in Canada. Nope, didn't find anything at all. So, I mean, that shows you the way it works, right? That's the one in Rome. That's the one they got permission to build from Jorge Bergoglio. That's the Mormon temple. And it's a suburb of Rome, not downtown. But.
So what's the best way to protect kids from these monsters?
We find the best way is not only public exposure, but direct action. Like I say, we've got the legal means to go in and investigate, go right into these churches and church buildings and say, this is a lawful warrant for us, the right to do that. Deputize police to do it. Some have cooperated when we've done that. That's why we were able to shut down that Ninth Circle ceremony in Montreal. And, you know, make a stink. That's, you know, the smaller you are, the bigger stink you have to make, right? And so we've got a whole campaign, like it's the Native people in Canada call it banishment and reclamation, where these churches have been banished from their land because of their crimes. They have the right to go in and legally occupy them, seize their assets. When you start threatening the assets of these churches, they get scared, and their public image. Those are their two Achilles heels that we always press on, right? The fact that this court case is coming up, giving them more exposure, working with the case or with the court in their case to, if you have evidence of wrongdoing by the Catholic Church or this Pope, anyone in Chicago who knows anything of his history, they're being granted immunity from prosecution by the court. And as a matter of fact, I mentioned this member of the Ninth Circle who has come forward. He did that in response to the amnesty he's being offered if he speaks. And he's going to be one of the star witnesses confirming all this stuff, everything we've been saying. So public involvement, not just, I appreciate everyone buy the books, but that's step one. We need, wherever you are, it's a global enemy. You can strike at the Church of Rome wherever you are. And so we say we've got to start doing that. We showed in Canada how easy it is to get this stuff exposed once you start going onto their real estate and threatening that directly. We say to the church people, come out. Stop giving money that's committing a crime when you fund these, you know, genocidal church bodies. And so we just say it's now up to everyone listening to take action. You know how to contact me. The email is right there. Sean's got it posted, the websites. And the proof's in what we do next. That's the only way things ever change, when people are willing to risk and take the next step. We've already broken the ice. It's relatively easy now to get involved in this movement.
Yeah, so all of Kevin's links are in the description. We've got over 1,000 watching live. The books, other videos, the contact website, etc. So please support his important work. And if you've got any questions, I know I've got backed up with questions. We'll get them to Kevin. But if you've got any further questions, keep putting them in the chat, please. I will get around to them. I'm just curious as well about the tax status of the Mormon Church. Did they just get a complete pass from the U.S.?
Yeah, it's amazing. It's funny because the Catholic Church does file tax statements in America. It's the only country in the world where there's some sense of what Vatican finances are doing in America. But the Mormons don't. They haven't filed a statement of their financial involvement for many years. So how come they get to get away with it? Again, there's another connection, some tie they've got with the feds in America, right? So we don't know, frankly, except there. I mentioned this investment company of theirs, Ensign Peak. They do publish statements like about their $56.8 billion investment portfolio. But also at other times, Mormon leaders refer to the $100 billion slush fund they have. Okay, so $100 billion is not coming from people sitting in the pews, right?
So how do they maintain that favorable tax status? Do they have lobbyists kicking down political contributions?
Not just lobbyists. They have senators. I'm trying to remember that guy's name. Maybe somebody can send me his name. My 69-year-old mind is forgetting these things. But anyways, Senator, they don't need lobbyists because it's at a higher level. It's right in the cabinet. Like I say, they're being consistent cabinet members in the Oval Office who are being active Mormons.
So JoJo wants to know, why would the FBI work with these monsters?
Well, like I say, for one thing, their role early on in the MKUltra experimentation, they had to be protected, so naturally the FBI will. Also, they have dirt. I mean, when you have that much money, it's like the Catholic Church. You can acquire dirt on anybody. And so it's kind of a mutual blackmail thing going on, you know. And also just, you know, when you're, like I said before, if you're raised in a cult, you're preordained to then be a loyal Fed, right? A loyal member of the FBI or whoever, and CIA also recruit a lot of Mormons. So, you know, it's like a training ground for spooks and others who are going to keep their mouths shut. They know how to. They've been programmed to.
Looks like Professor Hamamoto, and thank you, Professor, has given us a nudge here. U.S. Senator Orrin Hatch, LDS. Right. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah, Latter-day Saints. Yeah, that's right. I remember his name being mentioned. And there was attempts, you know, again, periodically Mormons try to sue the church, and they're prohibited from doing it. The state senators will bring in a law prohibiting it. You can't sue, and this is true about all the churches, you can't sue the church, only individuals within it. Just like you can't sue a nation for genocide or try them for genocide, just individuals, right? At least under their system of law. And Romney, that's his name, Romney. He was the Utah senator who ran for the Republican leadership a few times back before Donny Boy.
Can you imagine if he'd have got in, the power the Mormon church would have?
Oh, yeah.
They just completely co-opt everything. There he is. There's a picture of him. Let's get this up. Yeah, this guy.
Romney, yeah.
Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
So Nikki wants to know about the prevalence of Freemasons in the Mormon church.
Well, you know, it's kind of like with the Catholic Church. They have a policy against Freemasonry, and yet one of the reasons they killed off John Paul I was he discovered the P2 Freemason Lodge operating right within the College of Cardinals. And so I'm sure there are, because it's like people of a secret society tend to congregate together and scratch each other's backs. But I don't know. I haven't heard anything specifically about that from our Mormon sources.
Mary wants to know, are all of the churches of the world connected to the Vatican?
Financially, absolutely they are. But also, I gave you in the last interview, I talked about the World Council of Churches. That's the kind of the International Federation of Protestant Churches in the world. And the WCC is close in bed with the Vatican. They attend all the conferences. They've dropped the policy traditionally the Protestants had that the Church of Rome is antichrist. And, you know, it's the policy of what they call ecumenism, where it's described as an attempt to have equality and oneness among all the religions. In fact, it's just bringing everybody into the Church of Rome, like Queen Elizabeth did it with the Holyrood Agreement in 2010. Where she negotiated the terms of and violated her coronation oath by doing that, renegotiated to bring the Church of England back into the fold of Church of Rome. So in practice, yeah, there is no major church in the world that's willing to take on Rome. There's a few small churches, like remember Ian Paisley in Northern Ireland?
Yep.
There was a great scene where Ian Paisley stood up in the European Parliament when I think it was John Paul II was speaking to them, and he held up a sign saying Pope is Antichrist, and he got mobbed and, you know, arrested and that for doing it. But the point is, there's these small churches like the Free Presbyterians and Ulster and that who say, yeah, they've held to that traditional belief that he's an imitation of Christ designed to beguile and corrupt the human race and turn him away from Christ. And even the Pope's title confirms that. You know, Vicari Christi, the one who replaces Christ. It's right in the title.
Mm-hmm. Benny's saying, why are the Mormons fighting the cartels in Mexico? Well, Benny, you know, I've written extensively about the cartels, and there have been murders of Mormons in Mexico it's been put down to cartel activity. I don't know if you can add anything to that.
Well, it's like in any church. On the ground, individuals might be trying to do the right thing, but the leadership is in with all of these people who they're supposedly opposing. With that kind of investment portfolio and investing in banks like JP Morgan Chase, along with Trump International, launders money for the Mexican drug cartels. So why would the Mormon church be taking on one of their business partners? You know, so I mean, at the institutional high level, they're all part of the same problem. But the problem is people are sitting in the pews thinking, oh, this is the church I know, just what I see on Sunday, and we're all nice people trying to do the right thing. That's how the monster keeps operating, folks.
Are Mormons Amish people?
No, the Amish were different. They come out of the what's called the Anabaptist tradition, which is in the Middle Ages, like the Hutterites, the Mennonites. They tried to live a New Testament kind of Christianity where they said, we can't pay for war. We can't lift up arms. We don't baptize our children because you have to consciously accept the faith as an adult. They were almost exterminated by the church in Europe all during the Middle Ages. That's why a lot of the Anabaptists came to North America, like Hutterite colonies and that. I lived on one for a while. They're amazing people. You know, they hold everything in common. They try to follow the Bible and not worldly leaders, right? So they're very different than Mormons. Yeah, don't confuse the two.
Natalie, what about the United Brethrens? Are they similar to Mormons?
I don't think so. There are a lot of people who call themselves brethren and that, so I'm not quite sure who you're referring to, but not as far as I know, but maybe you can tell me more about that.
Let me have a look. The United Brethren Church is United Brethren Church refers to two related but distinct entities, the Church of the United Brethren in Christ and the Evangelical United Brethren Church. The Church of the United Brethren in Christ is a modern denomination with international presence, while the Evangelical United Brethren Church existed from 1946 to 68, eventually merging with the Methodist Church to form the United Methodist Church.
Oh, okay. So they're more liberal, free church tradition, like the Methodists. Like in England, that's why my folks came to Canada. We were Baptists, and you weren't allowed to preach. You weren't allowed to hold services unless you took an oath to the king. And Methodists were persecuted for a long time, too, because they were more kind of grassroots, didn't go along with the monarchy as much. But anyway, so that's all different tradition than the Mormons.
What does Kevin think of the Seventh-day Adventists?
I don't know. I've never really had contact with them, and so I can't really comment. I mean, again, you know, you meet individuals who say, I'm Seventh-day Adventist, fine, okay. But what does that mean in terms of the institution? Any institutional church has to get tax-exempt status from the government, and that's how they're controlled. So any mainstream church with, in America, they call it 501c3 status, tax-exempt status anywhere in the world, you're an arm of the state. You're a trustee of the government then. So you're not going to rock the boat about any of these issues, right?
Kevin, are you able to connect the church with other groups that we may not be aware of? I heard the Old Fellows, Shriners, etc. are all connected.
Odd Fellows, yeah. Well, it's hard to say, you know. I mean, there's all of these groups. But I know that the Rotary Club, that's one of these groups. They were named by one of our people, Matthew McDaniel, who was working in Thailand. The Rotary Club with the Catholic Church runs child trafficking networks all over and brothels all over Thailand. You know, the sex tourism industry, big Rotary Club involvement. So, I mean, who knows with these people? You got to dig and find out for yourself, right?
Can you ask Kevin about the Dalai Lama? Is he connected to the deep state, Nixium network, Epstein, and took $2 million in backhanders and images of him with children?
Well, here's what I know about the Dalai Lama, and this is on the record. He's been receiving money through the CIA for a long time, and that, of course, was because of his role in resisting China and holding on to try to hold on to the country Tibet, which had been absorbed into China. There's this famous picture of him with George Bush, kind of smiling and going like that, right in the Oval Office. But thanks for the check, George. But, you know, like the other thing, too, about him is that we had, when we first exposed some of the mass graves on the west coast of Canada, the Dalai Lama just happened to be in town, right? So one of the native elders invited him to come and meet with us to talk about these crimes of all these churches who, in fact, were sponsoring his trip. You know, like the United Church, the Anglicans, the Catholics, they were all on the Dalai Lama bandwagon and. So he refused, of course. He never showed. And they just totally ignored us. But so, you know, it's like you play the game in a big enough way. If you're an international church, you're all playing the game, you know.
All right, next question. Have you been following the Daybell trials, which is steeped in the LDS?
No, I haven't.
Okay. We've got a lot of questions coming about the Catholic stuff. I'm just trying to get all the Mormon ones out right now. Let me just see. Toffee, what do they have Jehovah's Witnesses in America? Of course they have Jehovah's Witnesses in America. They're everywhere, aren't they?
Yep.
Okay, and we've got...
are there any questions about the actual court case we're doing or some of the other things on the ground I mentioned?
Yeah, people want to know what's the progress there?
Well, like I say at the start of the show, we've been having direct video conferences with the witnesses. We've got protection around them. The prosecution's putting together its case, and I'm working hard with them on that. And there haven't been any more death threats. Remember the guy who told me I was going to end up chopped up in the Ninth Circle if I carried on? Probably a member of the Knights of Columbus in Toronto, but who knows? He sure looked like the guy I saw at that protest once. But I'll be disappointed if the Mormons now don't issue a similar death threat against me. I'm thinking, what am I doing wrong, right? Now that we're talking about them, right? But no, it's proceeding. And the thing is about this court case, it requires public involvement. Like in a common law court case, people say, how do you enforce a verdict? The enforcement lies in the hands of the public. The people are empowered to be sheriffs, to be deputies to the court to enforce these warrants, make the arrests, seize the assets and property, stop these child killers where they're operating. And we have the right and obligation to do that. So again, write to me, angelfire101@protonmail.com, about how to get involved in that.
Well, I'll go over to the mostly Catholic questions then. Now, Eva, I think she's referring to what we started with the open. How known are these horrific actions? Do ordinary Catholics know about these things?
The clergy all know about it. They have to. You don't remain a priest unless you're aware of the policy of Crimin and all of these actions. I found that out when I first exposed this stuff about the residential school death camps in Canada. All the clergy used to joke about it, you know, at the gatherings. You know, they would refer to, you know, these kids, and if you want a child, it's easy to get a native child. I mean, they talk openly about it. A lot of the senior people in the church all know about it. It's kind of like, you know, the way the human mind works. You don't want to look at something that upsets your worldview, so you just don't think about it. It's not like you don't know about it. It's just like, you know, who wants to buck the system and get killed? Who wants to lose your friends and neighbors and status and job, right? Better a child die than that happen. And that's the way, unfortunately, human beings are. And so, yeah, they know. Of course they know. Maybe new people to the church don't know, but they'll know soon enough. All they have to do is look at the evidence. Go to murderbydecree.com.
Right? So Tracy wants to know, does Pope Leo know that he's going to be summoned to court?
Well, I'm sure their people monitor all these things, and so he knows, I'm sure, but he won't get the actual summons until the first week in September, when the court formally convenes on Monday, September 1st.
Your thoughts on Leo's performance in the streets of Rome, getting searched by the cops, and then his PR speech to make him look great. He had no security and took food to the cops, thanking them.
It's just the same old crap about, you know, Bergoglio taking the name Francis and wearing a white robe all the time. He's like Francis of Assisi, don't you know? You know, these are all just gestures. I don't know how people are taken in by this. Like, you know, the dragon holds up a nice mask and everyone says, oh, what a pretty mask. You know, if you know anything, you've got to see how these are just, the more people do things like that, the more they have something to cover. And it's just more of the same crap.
Question from Hamamoto. What role does so-called First Nation casinos in Kanata play in the larger system of finance and control?
I can tell you a lot about that because it's something we've researched a lot and from our sources on reservations, and that Indian reservations in Canada and America and other places operate as prime money laundering and child trafficking and drug trafficking centers. And I know that from the people the Chiefs themselves and the people in the reserves and that. There's a place in Vancouver, for example, called River Rock Casino. It's where the Chinese mafia, the triad, they're called in Vancouver. It's where they launder all their money, thanks to Canadian senators like Larry Campbell, former mayor of Vancouver, too. And, you know, the reservations are, you see, they're crown land, but they're administered by the chiefs for the crown. So even by Canadian law, they can't, you can't go in there and start hunting around. They're perfect, you know, kind of mediums for hiding stuff, just like churches are. And it's extensive. We figure that the chiefs on the West Coast alone have been laundering money in the as much as $5 or $10 billion in the last decade. That's according to people in the RCMP who have told us that. And they also, the West Coast chiefs are using that money to sign oil and gas deals with China. These chiefs are profiting off the fact, they call them internal free trade agreements, where they can, they don't go through the Canadian government. They sign it directly, like the Wet'suwet'en Tribal Council up near Prince Rupert, where the Chinese are coming in a big way. They sign away all the oil and gas directly with China, never go through Canadian law or government or anything. And so that's why, you know, Charles Windsor just came to Canada. Remember, he was in Parliament. And remember what he said. This is such illuminating evidence. He said, he touted the usual line of, we are standing on unceded native land. So I said, wait a minute, the Crown is acknowledging that they'd never ceded the land. What, does that mean you're going to hand over the land to the natives now, Charlie? No, it means they're going to hand over the land to the native chiefs who are signing these deals. Because don't forget, remember that Rio Tinto Mining Corporation, this links closely with the Crown, and the 10 native people who they knocked off because they reposed the diamond mine in Saskatchewan just 2 years ago. Well, I mean, the Crown and Charles and China and the chiefs, they're like that, right? And I think that's why Trump wants to annex Canada, because there's this pulling match now, and China and Canada and the Crown are going definitely with China, like their Vatican business partners, right?
Deborah said, Kevin, are the casinos allowed for silence?
Allowed for silence meaning... allowed so that
like a quid pro quo.
Oh yeah. I mean, but it's always quid pro quo. Right? Everything operates that way, right?
Yes. So, Kevin, the Mormons funded a lot for the Jehovah's Witness and members, a friend from the beginning. How much of this have you delved into? I think the link between the Mormons and the Jehovah's Witness.
We haven't looked into the JW connection. If anyone has evidence about that, just send it to us. You know, the best sources are the people out there. You might know somebody who's heard about that. Just send it to us.
Between Orthodox and liberal, where does Kevin think the Vatican should land? I think the world is realizing that there is a need for a return to the Orthodox end.
Well, I think the Vatican should be abolished. I think it's an abomination, and so I don't take wings with either Orthodox or liberal. I think the whole thing is a corrupt mess. Like I mentioned, the liberal Pope Francis beatified, turned into a saint, the guy who murdered hundreds of thousands of native people in California. So, I mean, it's all the same monster. I don't think there's any redeeming qualities to it at that level. We say to Catholic priests and Catholics, leave it. Leave the corporation. Do your own thing separately. Keep it small and local. And, you know, that's kind of my general position.
Were all the residential schools in Canada victims to this abuse?
Of course, that's why they were set up. They were set up as death camps to depopulate the native population. They were set up in the 1880s when the native population had reached its nadir and to finish off the next generation. And it's all at murderbydecree.com if you want. You know, kind of the authoritative overview of what they were. They weren't about abuse. They weren't about teaching or schooling or any of that. It was about mass murder. And 50% of them died. That's a higher death rate than at Auschwitz and Treblinka.